Your old or broken phone can let you down when you need it most.
Perfect.
But at Verizon, trade in any old phone from our top brands and get the most for it. Up to $2,000 in value for an amazing new iPhone 16 Pro with Apple Intelligence and a new line on my plan. And iPad and Apple Watch Series 10. That's like a 3-for-1. And you can get it on any plan. At Verizon, trade in your old phone for a brand new iPhone 16 Pro, iPad, and Apple Watch. The other guys won't give you that. Visit Verizon.com today. Additional terms apply. Service plan required for Apple Watch and iPad. Up to $2,000 value based on iPhone, iPad, and Apple Watch. For a limited time at Verizon, you can get our best price ever for a single line. Just $45 per month when you bring your phone, which is less than you spend on too tired to cook takeout every week. Get one line on Unlimited Welcome for $45 per month with AutoPay plus taxes and fees. Visit your local Columbus Verizon store by April 2nd to save. $20 monthly promo credits applied over 36 months with a new line on Unlimited Welcome. In times of congestion, unlimited 5G and 4G LTE may be temporarily slower than other traffic. Domestic data roaming at 2G speeds. Additional terms apply.
At Ritual, we know what goes into the holiday season. The potluck planning, the gift giving, the spreadsheets. So this new year, take a moment for yourself with science-backed support that puts you first. So whether you're focusing on supporting foundational health with a clean vegan multivitamin or supporting your gut health with Symbiotic Plus, do it with 30% off your first month at ritual.com/podcast. These statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease.
What's up, you guys? Sean Rossap. Welcome to Fightful. Here's a name you know. We had a wonderful conversation with him a while back, and he is here again ahead of season 6 of Dark Side of the Ring. My God, I am so excited about what we're going to see on, I believe, March 25th, Vice, back again. We got Evan Husney. How you doing, man?
Good, man. Thanks so much for having me back. I really appreciate it.
I love it. And man, I really enjoyed our conversation last time. And I'm always interested in the how and why things happen. At what point do you find out season 6 is a go and you're off to work? Do you know immediately? Because I know there's a little bit of red tape behind officially announcing stuff like that.
Sure. You know, for every season, it's been kind of different. Early on, it felt like we were waiting several months after the season aired to find out if things were going ahead for the next one. But this time around, I think with the last few seasons, it's been, you know, probably midway through the season, you know, if the ratings hit whatever metric they need to hit, you know. But for the most part, you know, Vice has always been very supportive of the show. And I think they would want to keep making, you know, this show as long as they can, you know. So we feel lucky enough to be in that position, you know, with the show, and that it continues to perform well. People are still interested in it. And people show up to watch it, and you know, and obviously wrestlers still want to tell their stories. So I'm just super grateful for that. So it's awesome.
I remember there was a bit of a gap. I think 2022 it was. There weren't episodes in 2022, but also I remembered like season 3 was stretched out a little bit longer as well. What went into that? Was there anything like as far as production that caused that?
Well, yeah, season 3 is almost like 2 seasons because it is the largest. It's 14 episodes. It was kind of a crazy order that Vice made that kind of made us do a double take, like, oh my God, 14 episodes. and that was crazy. That was in 2020, and that was during the pandemic. So everything was unprecedented in terms of production, you know, and how to, and not just production, but everything was unprecedented as we were entering that year. But yeah, it was crazy. I mean, we didn't fly producing that season. We drove the whole way across country in an RV up and down cross country like 4 or 5 times. It was nuts. But anyway, we made that big season. And I think it was right around then we were developing Tales from the Territories as sort of a spinoff show that we did with $7. And we wanted just to do something different. I mean, we had done 30 episodes of the show, Dark Side, up to that point. And the thought of doing 2 shows at once was kind of intimidating because, you know, we like to be very involved and hands-on. And, you know, we just kind of wanted more than anything just to put all of our energy in trying something different. And so we did that. And, you know, now we're making, right now we're making 2 shows at the same time. Something that's not wrestling related, but it's been very challenging. So I'm glad that I didn't do that back then. But yeah, then we sort of came back around to Dark Side for 4 and 5, which we produced simultaneously as well. So, yeah, it was nothing more than just wanting to give all of our attention to territories at the time and to try and see if we can do something a little different.
That season had the Korea episode is my favorite. I have often said I learn more about North Korea from Scott Norton than public school. there's awesome. So much, like, between interviewing him and reading books and watching Dark Side of the Ring. Yeah. He's wonderful. Like, when I interviewed him, it was amazing because he just put over fake Sting the entire time, which I love, and how over he was. But, like, there is a look inside North Korea that most Americans don't ever get as a result of Dark Side of the Ring.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that episode is very special to me too, because not only was it just a crazy story, and it allowed us to kind of also experiment with a different tone for an episode. Like, we kind of leaned into this Twilight Zone sort of aesthetic, you know, strangers in a strange land, almost a science fiction type story. And it was fun, you know, to do, but also it was just like personal bucket list item for me, something I never would have thought I ever would have happened in my, you know, time doing these shows, which was interviewing Antonio Inoki, which was a crazy experience. I mean, it wasn't, you know, because of the pandemic, we couldn't get into Japan during that time, but we were able to set it up remotely. And still, you know, I'm looking at his face, he's looking at mine, and it was intimidating, you know, and there was a translator, but it was like, just, wow, I just never thought that I'd have that opportunity. And that was just so cool.
So as we see these episodes unfold, we got the announcement of the season 6 episodes. There's one that's very near and dear to my heart. Gosh, I think it was December 2015, I was making such little money that I was on food stamps when I was working at Wrestling Inc. And I reached out to a Twitter egg avatar at that time that said Mark Capani on it. And I was like, you know, I would really love to interview this guy because nobody's talked to him since he left. And to my shock, this Twitter egg avatar replied and I spoke to him. And I put together a long form feature, and it was integral to my career. I wanted to show people that I could do something besides just aggregating news. And that guy is so introspective. And he is an Italian guy that was effectively cast to play a typecast terrorist.
Yep.
And then he got a lot of the experience of discrimination that those people got during that period. And you can tell how much he grew from that experience. Mm-hmm. I am specifically interested to learn how that one came together, because to me, that's one of the most fascinating stories in wrestling history.
It is. Yeah. You're referring to the Muhammad Hassan story. So this has been one that we've been hearing nonstop from the fans on social media wanting this story. And truth be told, just fully transparent, it was a story that I wasn't actually sure could, and I often say this and I'm always proven wrong, is that it could, like, sustain the full hour of the show. You know, I wasn't sure if it would be something for a full episode of Dark Side, but boy, was I wrong. And I'm always wrong about that. It's an incredible story. It's absolutely fascinating, as you were saying, for many reasons. But the one thing that I think about his arc, you know, Mark Capani's arc in the business, that's so interesting, is that it is sort of this, like, Faustian bargain, I feel like, that he entered in, where, you know, he's a very gifted young man coming into OVW, great worker, great personality, you know, wants to live out his dream of becoming a wrestler, and really is making a name for himself down there. WWE calls, they have this, you know, kind of once in a lifetime opportunity for him to essentially fast track from developmental to the top, you know, of the card, you know, and to get into the main event picture pretty fast, you know, with vignettes and packages and promotion, strapping the proverbial rocket to him, if you will. And, but you have to play this incredibly insensitive, heat seeking terrorist, for lack of a better term, even though it was never explicitly said. It was, you know, he was, it actually is an interesting character. In the beginning, the concept, of course, was, you know, in the wake of 9/11, many Muslim Americans were feeling, you know, the Islamophobia that was sort of very pervasive in that time period. And he was sort of supposed to be a mouthpiece for that. Like, you know, me and my people, although, you know, he's really Italian, but the character that he's playing is experiencing all of this. And hey, we're still Americans and, you know, de fuck, right? So anyway, he gets this opportunity. But of course, the WWE is positioning him still as a heel. You know, you're still supposed to be booing this character, which is what makes it a little awkward by today's standards. And of course, actually, the most disturbing part of the whole story, without getting too deep into it, to me, is the audience reaction, because the audience is just villainizing this guy no matter anything they're doing. The sign, if you go back and see the signs people are holding, it's extremely cringe and very alarming in terms of the, you know, the racist stuff and the crazy stuff people are saying. So it's stoking on the fears of the audience, right? Wrestling's been doing that for so long. But he basically played this character to such an effect that it created an unprecedented level of controversy, to the point where, you know, networks were being concerned, like, should this character be on the air? Do we want to carry this product? Because it was going off the rails. And especially as things in the real world in the Middle East were heating up and other terrorist activity was happening, it was like, is this the best look for us to have this character on screen at the same time things in the headlines are happening? So to me, it's just a very fascinating episode looking at, you know, Mark's journey through wrestling, him sort of reckoning with this in terms of the character that he portrayed, and, you know, the insensitive that there was insensitivities there. And but also, yeah, as you said, just it's crazy him having to take this gimmick outside of, you know, the ring and sort of live the gimmick, wear, you know, a headdress and wear these things out in public, and experiencing real racism at the time is just completely fascinating and bizarre. But then also his journey to now where he's a school teacher. And he says, you know, he wouldn't change a thing. That failure of that gimmick led him to where he is now helping people. So you can't hate that. You know, it's great.
Some other episodes that are on tap this season: Vader, Tony Atlas, Superstar Billy Graham, Hot Stuff Eddie Gilbert, Billy Jack Haynes, Ludwig Borga, Daphne, the original Sheik. Like, there's a lot of good stuff in here. I mean, it's always wild. Like, for me as a viewer, like, I knew Daphne. I know Mark Capone, Muhammad Hassan, a little bit. I know Vince Russo. I worked with the man. Like, I had heard his side of Bash at the Beach 2000, and you know, me and him don't agree on much. I agreed with his approach to it at that situation. So it's really interesting to see, like, people, you know, covered in this. Yeah. And you come to know these people as you cover a lot of what they do as well.
That's right. Yeah. It is interesting. Like, there are relationships, you know, that we've forged, you know, through the process of doing this. I was saying the other day, like, you know, Jim Cornette has been in so many episodes of Dark Side of the Ring. I was sitting there in his house more recently and just being like, you know, I think I've been here 18 times.
My God.
I've been to his house. And I think outside of anywhere that I've ever lived in the country, you know, Louisville, Kentucky is the place that I've been to the most out of any other city in the world because of that. So, yeah, you know, and of course, Mick Foley, you know, is another person that we've, you know, just had a great relationship with over the years. I mean, he was kind of patient zero in a lot of ways. Like, you know, things kind of could have gone a different way, sliding doors with Darkseid, where he would have been the narrator for the show. That was the original sort of intention of the series. But he didn't know us. We didn't have street cred. And so he was a little worried about some of the stories we were covering and how we'd handle them, and which I totally understand, because we were green, you know, green as grass back then. But it's cool to come full circle with him now, because we always wanted to do a story about him, because I've always found him to be just one of my favorite personalities in wrestling, not only just as a human being, but to me, he operates on like a plane of performance art, you know, or like just the way that he thinks about the business and the way that he applied himself as a character and how deep he went and how, you know, all the sacrifices he made for the sake of his, you know, art, his sort of theater of cruelty style of art, performance art, has just always been really fascinating to me. And so we finally got the opportunity to convince him. He was a little gun shy for several seasons about kind of being a subject on the show. But we were finally able to do it. And, you know, the Hell in the Cell match, while it has been, you know, it's well-trodden territory, of course, for wrestling fans, that was such a huge deal for me as a kid, and I'm sure a lot of people of my generation who saw it live. I mean, that's the thing we all talked about on the playground afterwards, was that match and what happened. I mean, it's just still the craziest thing, and it's always the match that I show people who've never seen like a, you know, a wrestling match before, because their jaws are usually on the floor. And, you know, however you may feel about that style of wrestling, the story that is told in that ring and on that night is just almost like it's a roller coaster ride unlike any other. You know, this idea of, well, this guy might die in the ring, of course there's that, but to me it's just the brilliance of having him carted away in the stretcher and then him getting up and reclimbing the cage, like, is something that always, like, you know, gives me goosebumps. It's so amazing. But it was a challenge for us to kind of just make, can we make an entire episode out of a full match? Like, we live, I think, in the Hell in the Cell match in this episode longer than the actual runtime of the matches.
Yes.
And that was kind of the whole point, was let's just try and live in this match and get deep into the psychology of Mick Foley and what he was thinking versus what he had planned versus what other people knew. And then let's try and bring in as many people who were there and seeing it unfold. So it is kind of this like urgent, you know, sports, real-time sports documentary is kind of how it plays, which is really cool. And it was great to talk to people like Francois Petit, you know, who was the, who was sort of the quote unquote doctor they had in the back, who's more just like a physical therapist, but you don't really hear from him all that often. And I was just shocked when he told us that he also played Sub-Zero in Mortal Kombat in the first movie. I had no idea that that's who that was. So very cool. And he's a cool character in the piece. But so I urge anybody who feels like they've heard this story before, this is a very cool look at this. And I think it's a little deeper than most of the pieces you've seen on it before.
How do you weigh, like, as far as subjects, something that everybody knows about, like Mick Foley, and things that, like, most people probably don't, like Hot Stuff Eddie Gilbert from a national perspective, or last year Chris Colt, like that? Sure. Chris Colt's episode was the exposure to, I would say, mm-hmm. probably like 95% to 99% of the audience.
Oh, totally. I mean, I remember when Chris Jericho sat down to do the voiceover, he's like, I never heard of this guy. So,
yeah,
you know, like even people have been in the business forever, the most hardcore fans, it was something for them to discover, which is really cool. So, and for us, it's like, we try to have something for everybody. You know, I try to also not, you know, because I am a fan and I've grown up with this and you know, we know so much about wrestling and all that stuff. I am a fan. So I do want to create episodes that if I didn't make the show and I was a viewer, I would want to see. And also, you know, I'd want to see an episode that doesn't feel like it's been told 1,000 times as well, too. However, I also don't want to underestimate the person that has never seen the Hell in a Cell match before. And this might be their first exposure to it. Because we hear
your old or broken phone can let you down when you need it most.
Perfect.
But at Verizon, trade in any old phone from our top brands and get the most for it. Up to $2,000 in value for an amazing new iPhone 16 Pro with Apple Intelligence and a new line on my plan. And iPad and Apple Watch Series 10. That's like a 3-for-1. And you can get it on any plan. At Verizon, trade in your old phone for a brand new iPhone 16 Pro, iPad, and Apple Watch. The other guys won't give you that. Visit Verizon.com today. Additional terms apply. Service plan required for Apple Watch and iPad. Up to $2,000 value based on iPhone, iPad, and Apple Watch. For a limited time at Verizon, you can get our best price ever for a single line. Just $45 per month when you bring your phone, which is less than you spend on too tired to cook takeout every week. Get one line on Unlimited Welcome for $45 per month with AutoPay plus taxes and fees. Visit your local Columbus Verizon store by April 2nd to save. $20 monthly promo credits applied over 36 months with a new line on Unlimited Welcome. In times of congestion, unlimited 5G and 4G LTE may be temporarily slower than other traffic. Domestic data roaming at 2G speeds. Additional terms apply.
I hear about all the time from people who aren't fans of wrestling, who for whatever reason, like, I don't watch wrestling, I don't want to watch wrestling, but I love the stories that you guys tell on the show. You know, because they're human stories, or they're, you know, beyond just, you know, you don't have to be a fan to be swept up in the drama of all of these stories. So we do try to also cater to those people. And, you know, so it's all, and it helps to have an episode too that has such a built-in awareness, like the Hell in the Cell, to kind of anchor a season. You know, like, you hear something that, you know, your more casual fan or your non-fan might have heard about or might have interest in, and then they might want to stick around later down the season and learn about Eddie Gilbert, you know, who a lot of people, you know, and that's a cool story too, because it's very deep cut, but it's also like so many things so many people are almost like paying homage to Eddie Gilbert without even realizing they are. You know, he's one of these great minds of the business, one of these amazing people that, you know, paved the way in terms of a modern way of thinking about booking. I feel like he was kind of a generation ahead of himself, you know, like it's too bad that if he would have come in one generation later, he probably would have been somebody that everybody would have known. Like in the Attitude Era, he would have ripped it up, you know, and then of course where the creative and wrestling was going, he would have been perfect for that. Unfortunately, that wasn't the case and he died really young, but this is sort of a chance to spotlight the things that he did achieve, but also kind of like a what if story in terms of had he been born in a different time or just had he been able to live on and what he would have contributed to the Monday Night Wars or to ECW even or anything else, you know? So it's a very exciting story, I think, for like the diehards.
I'm interested because like viewership is such a topic on wrestling Twitter and all that. Like how do you all weigh a success? How does Vice weigh a success? Because it's hard for me to believe that it would just be what your typical overnight viewership you see in on like Raw, SmackDown, because you guys get replayed an awful lot. Yeah. Like, yeah. I mean, you guys are replayed on like the Pluto channels and stuff like that a lot as well.
Yeah.
Like it's
Hulu.
It is an evergreen product that you all produce. Mm-hmm.
I don't know to be honest, I don't know their specific metric for success, like what they need to hit in order to do it. You know, I think with the television audiences declining on cable, you know, I think that scale is always sliding, you know, because of where things are at. But like you said, you know, this show, it isn't always about the overnight live ratings. You know, there's a lot of competition out on cable and, you know, we do have a loyal fan base we've built up over six seasons that have, you know, selected Dark Side on their DVRs and they're going to hit it, you know, when they hit it, you know, and stuff like that, which is great. Obviously, I'm sure the network would prefer everybody watching it live for obvious reasons.
Of course.
But we have built that up. And then, of course, it gets on Hulu. And then, of course, it's sold and distributed, you know, in other places as well. So, I think, you know, for them, they whatever their metrics are for success, it thankfully, knock on wood, keeps hitting that. You know, for us, it's more paying attention to how it's perceived. You know, we want people to like the shows. You know, we've done 60 of them now. It's kind of crazy to think that many stories could withstand, you know, what this, I guess, what you classify as a dark side of, you know, episode. And that's why we've kind of opened it up a little bit too. I mean, you know, John Tenta is not an episode everyone would have thought it would be a thematic fit for our show, right?
Oh, buddy.
But we can.
Buddy, I was pumped. I was pumped for it.
Nice. That's awesome.
I keep that thing on me.
Yeah.
This is when haircuts were men right here.
Oh, hey, man. I wish we could go back to wrestlers all having that haircut.
It was the best.
Yeah, it was a better time.
Every time I saw somebody in the grocery store that was overweight with that haircut, exactly. I believed they could fucking fight because of John Tenta. John Tenta.
That look is just ring ready when you see that look.
Yes, absolutely.
Money and ring ready. But like the John Tenta thing, it's like, for me, it's like the dark side of thing. I do hear people saying, well, what's dark about Vader? Well, you know, see the episode for yourself. Or what's dark about John Tenta? But it's like, it always, to me, it's like, it doesn't have to be so one-to-one or like, you know, it doesn't have to be something that's, you know, has to 100% fit that sort of archetype of, you know, a story about drugs or whatever. You know, it can be just a human story that has elements that, you know, are, you know, very emotional or tragic, or just a good story, you know. And you know, we always try to bring people up in the end. You got to bring them up in the end and you got to see the light at the end of the tunnel. And we've always tried to do that as much as possible.
And it's funny because, again, like I said, there's so many distribution methods and ways to watch Dark Side of the Ring. But like when people do talk about viewership, it's one of those unique shows that the viewership has not evaporated by today's metric since the first season. There's so many shows that have, but somehow Dark Side of the Ring is is not one of those. Like it's doing numbers. There was an episode that did higher last year than almost any first year. That's why I'm like, man, it's really hard to judge it just based on an overnight or anything.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, we definitely got a lot of eyeballs on season two because of that came out during lockdown. I think that came out in March or April of 2020. And so
I remember it was right as soon as the Benoist came out. Yeah.
Yeah, that's right. So I think, you know, there was a lot of people watching, and the Owen Hart episode did record numbers. I think that's still the highest rated show that Vice has had. I think it's like we've built that following over the course of, you know, those seasons, but it is interesting. And there's no real secret to what episode is going to rate better than the other one. I think it's just the factors of what people are doing, what's on TV that night, what are people doing, and it's random. Because I've seen, you know, an episode like Chris Cult, or I've seen an episode that is the deepest cut guy or wrestler or personality, and rates higher than someone that everybody knows, you know? Or you look at, like, I would have thought the Marty Jannetty episode would have canceled all their plans, you know, for that for that night to watch that, but they didn't, you know? They all did something else, which, okay, fine, whatever, I get it. But there's no real, it's hard to predict what episode is going to outperform the other. There's no real metric to it that I can see, anyway. Besides the ones that are very obvious, like Owen and Benoit, that there's a lot of interest in. Of course, those do well, but the other ones, it's crapshoot.
I just love the idea of a lot of sports fans getting their wives to watch like The Last Dance, and then those wives being like, "Hell yeah, the sports documentary is pretty good." And then that husband going, "Well, let me show you about New Jack real quick. Let me introduce you to Herb Abrams." It happens a lot. Yeah,
it happens. And that's my favorite thing, is when somebody is exposing their partner, loved one, sibling, you know, father, uncle, aunt, whatever, to this crazy world that has nothing to do with it, but they're down for it, you know, and they're like, this is nuts and I love it. Because I hope that our show doesn't play, I think some people have a perception that it plays like a cautionary expose, like, look at this, you know, like John Stossel's kind of 2020 piece on wrestling, you know, we're exposing the secrets and then look how, like, you know, effed up this all is. It's not. We love it. And I hope that passion for, you know, the fact that we're fans of this and have grew up loving it comes through, despite if the story, you know, has a tragic piece to it or has a controversial aspect to it. Like, we still love this business and are obsessed with it, but we also want to, you know, wrestling has been guarded for so long and it's been hard to separate fact from fiction. We want to know the real stories just like all the fans do, and why there's a whole industry around that concept, right? So
what has been the easiest episode by way of assembling it, stories, interviews that you have put together that's come together like perhaps the easiest?
Dang, that's easiest is actually harder to remember than the hard ones.
Of course.
But the easy, like, you know, sometimes with like an episode like John Tenta or an episode like Vader. Well, John Tenta is a really good example because he's so loved. You know, he's one of these guys like Owen Hart where you can't find anybody to say a bad thing about them. You know, you just can't.
Yeah.
Right. And so when you have someone like that, that makes it extremely easy to put together, especially when you can make one phone call to the family, which always is the first phone call for us. And if the family embraces the idea and is passionate about the idea, then you know everything else is going to fall into place because all the other subjects are going to want to, you know, do this for the family and they're going to want to see it happen. And that's when you know you have something that's, you know, quote unquote, easy to put together. From a story standpoint, because let's be honest, the access to these stories and getting access to these stories is the hardest part. It's the hardest part about any of it. You know, doing the interviews, the reenactments, you know, the editing's challenging, but anything else, it's like, it pales in comparison to just assembling the cast for who's going to be interviewed for these episodes. And, you know, Vader's a similar story. It's like, you know, his family, super passionate to tell the story, really was thrilled at us reaching out and wanting to do it. And so when you know that you have that support, you know, it can be put together quite easily for the most part. Now, not all families we've reached out to, it goes that easy, you know, without naming names, but I think that's probably the easier ones, the ones that just come off the top of my head, you know.
Is there a specific episode, if you had to pick one, that you're most excited for the audience to see this year? as we start this new season on March 25th?
Man, that's a good question. You know, honestly, they're not all finished yet. So,
okay.
This is kind of how it goes. We're kind of like half of them are like done. Like the first five are done.
Of course.
The back five are still in various stages of completion, which is always very anxiety inducing because, you know, you have no more time. You're out of time. You have to deliver them as they air and it's really stressful. But so it wouldn't be fair to all of them because I haven't seen them in their final state. But the ones that I'm, if I can just pick a few, because it'll be, it's tough. The Hell in the Cell one, I personally feel like ranks up there in my, if I had to make like a top 10 list of the episodes we've ever done.
I'm excited based on the concept you told me. Like, I think that's amazing.
I would put that in the top 10 we've ever done because I feel like just from, you know, the interview subject strength, how intense it is, how and shout out to our editor Peter who just killed it on that episode. I think it's amazing. So that one I'm really excited for a kind of a deep cut wild episode. The Ludwig Borga episode is pretty crazy.
I was about to mention that. There's so much about this guy people don't know. Like,
yeah,
it's insane. This guy became a pro boxer after WWE too.
Kind of.
I mean, like, he's often the example that I use when people say, oh, this big guy could beat up any guy. I'm like, buddy, Randy Couture was a light heavyweight and smoked him in under a minute. Ludwig Borga was this big juiced up guy. Like, I'm so excited for that episode.
Yeah, that episode is interesting because we have something, we have a saying around here, which is the which we call the Hasbro principle, which is if they got a Hasbro figure, you know, might as well look at it for a possible episode of the show.
Yeah.
You know, and it always, like, before you rule it out, you know, it's like if they got a Hasbro, it's worth looking into. So, you know, Ludwig does have a Hasbro and he's the part of the last series. I think he's actually the most valuable based on rarity, scarcity. He is the most valuable Hasbro, I think, outside of the, you know, the prototypes and the misprints and whatnot. But anyway, so in that story, it's not so much about his career in WWF for that year he was there, if that, in the mid-90s. It's more so about this, his political career after WWF in his homeland of Finland, where he turned into basically a Nazi and led this far right party. And it's very scary and very eye opening. And I think there's a lot of just new, it's going to be tons of new information for people who may have heard that name. But I guarantee you, you're going to learn a lot from that episode.
WWF had to cover up his swastika tattoo, according to Bruce Pritchard.
Yeah,
like,
wild,
man.
Yeah, he had
insane.
He had an SS tattoo on his calf that they discovered.
That's what it was. Yeah,
yeah. After he was brought in, and they were basically they covered it up, you know, with taller boots, and then it was basically looking for any reason that they could to get rid of him. By that point, because he also was just a very unsavory.
As if that wasn't enough of a reason.
I know, right? Exactly. But I think he was also on top of how insane that is of having that tattoo. I think he was also just a very not very liked individual in the locker room, very unsavory. And so I think they, you know, when they got rid of him, I think he got injured, and then and that was the end of that. But he got deported from this country for, you know, drugs
and machine guns.
Yeah, it's crazy. And then went back to Finland, tried to stop at nothing to become a local celebrity by being on their version of Gladiators. He made his own weird electro rock album. And then he ran for office and he won. And the craziest part about it is, you know, he had all the crazy divisive racist rhetoric, you know, that helped him get elected. But he is one of the most voted for politicians ever in Finland, which is crazy. So he did kind of, you know, he became this firebrand and he did this. But then, of course, you know, he was there was a lot of drugs and there was a lot of booze and there was a lot of hubris, and that obviously led to his downfall. But it's just a fascinating, wild and crazy story that's well beyond the scope of just wrestling.
So excited for this season. It kicks off on March 25th on Vice at 10 p.m. Evan, I want to thank you so much for taking the time. I look forward to talking to you a number of more times about this program. I would love to talk to you again specifically after the Hassan episode, whenever it drops as well.
Yeah, we should do that.
I am so excited to learn new things about this story.
But I'm sure it'll turn a few heads as well.
Oh, I'm excited. Yeah. I'm so excited. Yeah. Again, cool. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Sean. Appreciate you, man.
Until next time, my friends, we're out.
Your old or broken phone can let you down when you need it most.
Perfect.
But at Verizon, trade in any old phone from our top brands and get the most for it, up to $2,000 in value, for an amazing new iPhone 16 Pro with Apple Intelligence and a new line on my plan, and iPad and Apple Watch Series 10. That's like a 3-for-1. And you can get it on any plan. At Verizon, trade in your old phone for a brand new iPhone 16 Pro, iPad, and Apple Watch. The other guys won't give you that. Visit Verizon.com today. Additional terms apply. Service plan required for Apple Watch and iPad. Up to $2,000 value based on iPhone, iPad, and Apple Watch. For a limited time at Verizon, you can get our best price ever for a single line. Just $45 per month when you bring your phone, which is less than you spend on too tired to cook takeout every week. Get one line on unlimited welcome for $45 per month with AutoPay plus taxes and fees. Visit your local Columbus Verizon store by April 2nd to save. $20 monthly promo credits applied over 36 months with a new line on unlimited welcome. In times of congestion, unlimited 5G and 4G LTE may be temporarily slower than other traffic. Domestic data roaming at 2G speeds. Additional terms apply.
What is Dax, are you?
Tracking all our cars on Carvana Value Tracker on all our devices? Yes, Kristen, yes I am.
Well, I've been looking for my phone for...
In Dax's domain, we see all, so we always know what our cars are worth.
All of them?
All of them. Value surge, trucks up 3.9%.
That's a great offer.
I know. Sell?
Sell.
Track your car's value with Carvana Value Tracker today.
Big shout out to you for making it through the hectic holiday season. This new year, get clean, quality, pregnancy nutrient support off your to-do list, including Ritual's best-selling essential prenatal multivitamin, designed with 12 traceable key ingredients to support a healthy pregnancy. With big changes coming up, take the small steps now and start today with 30% off a 3-month supply at ritual.com/podcast. These statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease.